The following program is brought to you by Tower Keepers. Support your local CSN station.
CSN International presents To Every Man an Answer, the live Bible answer program that equips you to give a reason for the hope that lies within you. If you have a question on the Bible or the Christian faith, you can call us at 1-888-827-5276. That's 1-888-ASK-CSN. Now let's get things started. Here's today's host.
Yes, we are live now. Hi, and welcome to Friday's edition of Two to Every Man an Answer. I'm Scott Parker, the pastor of Calvary Chapel in Festus, Missouri. That's just south of the city of St. Louis, and I'm the Bible teacher on A Word for the Church, heard every Saturday at 10 a.m. Central Time and Sunday at 6 p.m. Central Time here on the CSN Network. And I'd like to just extend an invitation to all of you, if you live in or will ever visit the St. Louis area, we would love to have you to join us for church at Calvary Chapel in Festus on Sunday mornings at 9:30 a.m. and Wednesday evenings at 6:30 p.m. And joining me today is the founder of the Pacific Justice Institute and the featured speaker of the Dacus Report, heard here on CSN on Saturdays at 4 p.m. Mountain Time, and that is Mr. Brad Dacus. Brad, it's great to have you on today. Thanks for joining us.
It's great to be on the program with you, Scott, Pastor Scott. I was actually in Missouri just 2 weeks ago. I was guest preaching at a church in Joplin, Missouri. Wonderful people, wonderful country, and it was a great experience. And it was really encouraging to see that the entire country is not like California. So it's very encouraging.
Yeah, Brad, that's true. You know, when people come to Missouri or talk about coming to Missouri, I say, welcome to America.
Yes.
for the biggest part. But, oh, my goodness. Yeah, so if you ever come to our neck of the woods, you're going to have to let us know. And we'd love to have you here as well on the other side of Missouri. So, Brad, if you would, just for our listeners, if you could give them some information about your ministry and what you do in the way of freedom and in the way of just helping people realize, you know, what freedoms they have here in our country still.
Yeah, my pleasure, Scott. Thank you. We at Pacific Justice Institute, we founded the organization. I founded it back in 1997 with the help of a former Attorney General, Ed Meese. And we have now grown considerably, defending religious freedom, parents' rights, sanctity of human life, so that we have offices in 16 states, 20 attorneys in 16 states, having a real impact for the kingdom in defending religious freedom, parents' rights, sanctity of human life. We're right now in the process of defending individuals who are hundreds of thousands of people right now who are about to lose their jobs because of their faith convictions with regards to the vaccine mandates. We have countless numbers of parents who are in desperate need for guidance on how to protect their children from a growing reports of vaccine mandates that for children that are already being implemented in some places across the country. So we're stepping up. We've grown considerably in just in the last 3 years. Some of the cities we're located in because we have these attorneys who love to come and speak to groups. We love to, maybe there's a town hall. We're having town halls scheduled across the country to help parents and people deal with these mandate issues specifically. But we're, of course, up and down California. We have, Oregon, Washington State, Nevada, Colorado, Texas, Mississippi, Florida, Georgia, New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Ohio, Illinois, Chicago specifically, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. So we've got a lot going on, and we've got a lot of offices, and we're here to serve people. We do all our work without charge. And one thing that makes us sort of unique, Scott, is that because the other group's doing good work, but we don't just cherry pick high profile cases. We work hard to make sure that no one is ever left alone, that no one is left on the side of the road when it comes to religious freedom, parents' rights, sanctity of life. And we have great resources on our website to empower people in the areas that we've already talked, that I've already mentioned, and more.
That's great. That is such a needed ministry and agency in our time with what is going on in our country. And Brad, you know, just all the years I've been alive, I just did not ever think, I mean, we read Bible prophecy and we know things are going to get worse in the future, but you never thought that, you know, at least in our lifetime, we would be seeing America turning the way it is right now, and just seeing the government overreach. And that's actually an understatement, I believe, for what we're seeing going on right now. And so real quick, before we go to some questions, what are some things right now that you guys are dealing with intensely right now? I know, you know, we've still got, you know, some pastors still, you know, fighting for their right to assemble, and you know, especially in California, who dealt with, you know, all of that and are still fighting that battle. But then we have the whole vaccine thing. What would you like to say concerning all of that, and give our listeners some information on what's going on and what you're dealing with?
Yeah, certainly. First, with regard to the church shutdowns, that was a huge tsunami that hit our country. We have Zoom calls every other Thursday at 2 p.m., and they're initiated during the shutdown just to empower pastors of churches and those with private Christian schools and Christian-owned businesses. And, you know, how can they reopen? How can they overcome this oppression, particularly in what I call the oppressive states, predominantly the blue states, versus the free states, which are states like Missouri and Texas and Florida and Tennessee, et cetera. So that we took it, we played a major role there. We filed litigation. We had a major victory before the United States Supreme Court last March, where we got an emergency injunction from the Supreme Court, 6-3, they voted, in just 3 days of deliberation. And it was an injunction against the governor of California, Governor Gavin Newsom, in Santa Clara County on behalf of churches that were shut down. It was a decisive win, which has been very helpful to us as we do cleanup in many other parts of the country where churches are still having unnecessary, unreasonable resistance. But we've had tremendous victory. The critical battle, the Gettysburg, if you will, has already happened, and our side won. Now it's just furthering, moving the cleanup, if you will, to end that. But then this other tsunami hit us, which are the vaccine mandates. And, you know, we all thought that, well, vaccines, it's going to be out there like all vaccines. It's going to be voluntary. Those who are most at risk are naturally going to want the vaccine. Those who are not at risk, you know, may not want to take the jab, considering it's an experimental vaccine with serious ramifications. Potentially, we have over 16,000 people that we know, according to the Federal Viral Register. This isn't my numbers. This is Federal Register. Over 16,000 people have died from the vaccine. Over 800 teenage boys have already had inflamed hearts. This is a long-term ramifications for these 800 teenage boys, inflamed heart because of the vaccine. A number of countries, Denmark, Sweden, Finland, Norway, they've effectively banned these vaccines for minors, people under 18. One of the countries is under 30. So there's serious ramifications from so many people. It's a valid concern. We also have, according to the viral registry, we have over 700,000 Americans who've had the vaccine who have had serious or long-term repercussions and effects. Everything from strokes to partial paralysis to all kinds of things. So this is not it's not like a polio vaccine. There's serious consequences. And this is just what's recorded in the Federal Register. Many people believe that that's just a fraction. On the other hand, we've had over 700,000 people die reportedly from the vaccine, although at least 4 out of 5 of those had serious underlying conditions already, like cancer, for example, et cetera. But like Colin Powell, for example, he said initially he died from the COVID, but then they said, no, actually he had blood cancer, and that's actually what really he died from. The hospital reported as COVID, so they get twice the federal money payback as opposed to reporting what it really is. So those numbers of that 700,000 we know is really not actually legitimately that high. So that's sort of the reality, those reality numbers. So we have a lot of people saying, hey, I don't want this vaccine. I don't want it for my children. I don't want it personally. They're not at risk. But a large percentage of those are people who have sincere religious convictions. You know, Scott, they've prayed about it. They sought the Lord on it. They sought the direction of the Holy Spirit, and they feel God does not want them to take this vaccine. Mm-hmm. And because of that, many of them are right now in the brink of losing their jobs.
Yes.
Losing their jobs. And you may know some people in your congregation that are right now going through that.
Yep.
I don't know how bad Missouri is, but I know in California it's very massive, the number. And then we have all those parents who are concerned about, you know, vaccine mandates. California is institutionalizing it next year for all children, even kids in private schools, Christian schools, are going to be mandated to be vaccinated. The good news is we have an answer for that, to protect families and parents, on our website, and also to protect employees who want to file a religious exemption. They don't know how to do it. We have it all laid out on our website, pji.org. And also, once again, also if it's pji.org. It's there even for military personnel, college students. And then if people would like us to come in and do a town hall in their community, or to come in and guest speak at their church, or for me, I'm a commissioned minister. I do a lot of guest preaching from the Word. 2 Timothy chapter 2 is what chapter 3 and 4 is what I'm preaching from. Love to come in, either preach or do a town hall meeting on empowering people and what they can do. So that's sort of an overview. And then we have a lot of cases that we're engaged in as well. And if you want me to talk about those right now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, Brad, let's go ahead and we'll go to a couple of calls here.
Sure.
If we get a lull or get some time, we'll come back and let you talk some more about that. It's mind-boggling what's going on in our country, but thank God for men like you, you know, men that love the Lord, people that love the Lord and know His Word, and that God has raised up in our country for this time. I mean, I look at guys like you and, you know, other ministries that are similar to yours, some on the East Coast as well, where you guys are just fighting for freedom and fighting, you know, and especially, and not just for Christians, but especially for Christians, you know, here in America with all that's going on. And like you mentioned just a moment ago, you're exactly right, Brad. We here in our own church, you know, we have people who are facing that very thing. It's do I get the vaccine or do I lose my job? You know, and we've had it go both ways. Or, I should say both ways. We haven't anybody lose their job yet, but we've had some that, you know, have taken the vaccine because they, you know, they felt they had to. They were pressured to. But then we have, you know, some that are seeking religious exemption. I had a young man that I was actually very proud of, a young man who wrote up an incredible testimony, how he came to Christ at our church, and then his conviction of why he doesn't feel he should be forced to take this vaccine, and it was very biblical. His answer was fantastic, and so he asked me to write that exemption letter for him for his work, and I just heard from him yesterday that they did grant his exemption, so he's going to be able to continue to work at his job, you know, and doesn't have to take the vaccine. So, you know, it went both ways in our church, you know, and it's something that, you know, honestly and truly, and like you said, you know, when you look at real science and you look at the numbers and you look at what's all going on, you know, in these vaccines, you know, we shouldn't be forcing that on anyone, you know, and again, you know, as a pastor, I don't judge anyone who decides to take the vaccine or refrain from it. You know, I believe that's, you know, you got to educate yourself and make your own decisions,
right.
You know, based on what you know and based on your convictions with the Lord, and then go forward in faith, you know, but being forced by our government to do that or lose our job, that's, you know, like I said, it's to say governor overreach is an understatement. But thank God, Brad, thank you so much for all you do and for your ministry there and being a champion of freedom in our country right now. Let's go ahead and go to the phones, and we're going to go ahead and go to Mike. Mike is in Boise, Idaho, and he's got a question for us. Mike, you're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. God bless you both for the work that you do, and I appreciate you taking my call. I guess I've got, you know, probably a number of questions, but let me kind of set the stage for it. So both my wife and I are longtime federal workers. We've both filed our religious exemptions and asked for reasonable accommodations. We haven't heard back on any of that as of yet. And Brad, just so you know, we went to your website. We kind of looked at all of the things you recommended. We listened to your Zoom call last night. And so I think from the sounds of it, we've done a very good job of that. I guess my question is, first question would be, if it comes down to it, and we're either, number one, forced to retire or get fired, I was just wondering what would be the better as far as being able to come back and file for, a wrongful termination.
Yeah, you do not want to resign. You want to force them to fire you. That makes it definitely easier. You don't have to, if you've resigned, then you have to prove the reason you resigned, that it was an effective termination because they effectively notified you that you would be fired. It's just better to stay on, have a good attitude, keep working and make them, you know, have you be fired and make sure it's very clear in writing that you were fired. That it's, you have received written notice. That's important for a couple reasons. One is for your defense. So you don't have to prove that. Instead, you just have to prove were you wrongfully fired. Okay. You don't have to prove that you're fired. It's just you're wrongfully fired. And then second, it's also good for unemployment purposes. When you're fired, you're terminated, you're often eligible for unemployment, particularly if you filed for a religious exemption. You arguably are entitled to unemployment. If people just are fired because they refuse the vaccine and they haven't filed for a religious exemption or a medical exemption, then they're oftentimes deemed to not be eligible for unemployment because they arguably did not meet the willing to do the job, if you will, and that part of that job is to be vaccinated pursuant to the employer's requirements. So you want to make sure that you have filed for an exemption so that that way you have a bona fide opportunity also for unemployment. That's how you handle that. I'm really glad you went to our website. Glad you participated in our Zoom calls. Those are every other Thursday, usually at 2 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and people have to register on our website ahead of time, pji.org. We've expanded it so everyone can get in, and because we outgrew it, I guess. So we anyone who wants to get in, they can get in, but they have to pre-register ahead of time.
Okay.
All right. Mike, does that help you? You have another question. Go ahead.
It did, and I think I kind of knew that. Here's a little bit of the conundrum. If we get fired, we're going to lose health benefits, probably some portions of pension, and a few other things. And I guess that that's got us a little bit nervous about that. And we also wrote in our in the religious exemption, you know, letter, they said, "Is there anything else that you would like to say?" And I think both of us in one way or another said, we really have no plans to retire in the near future, probably, you know, maybe 5 years out or so. But we've got things that we still want to accomplish at work. We look forward. We like our jobs. And we mentioned all that. So I guess my question is, you know, the possibility of losing these health benefits and maybe some other benefits. as opposed to possibly going back and suing for wrongful termination. I guess is that just something we have to, you know, kind of weigh the scales and figure that out on our own?
Yeah, that's something you're going to have to weigh the scales exactly. It's good to make it very clear that you have a good attitude, you want to stay there. You know, it's not like you have a chip on your shoulder. You're not going to be a rebel rouser. I think that's I think you're doing it correctly. Did you mention RFRA did you mention Title VII? Did you also mention RFRA, Religious Freedom Restoration Act, in your?
We heard you talk about that last night, and both of us realized that we did not.
Okay, it's not a critical thing. Title VII is what's real important. You know, if they give you a denial, you know, you might want to send them a second, you know, request and end it with pursuant to Title VII and the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. You know, you request once again, you know, and so you just go on record that is something you pled, that you made clear. I think that could be helpful. Have you had COVID already? No?
Yes. Both of us have. Yes,
you have. Okay, so I also recommend you did you mention that in your request for exemption?
I don't think we did.
Okay. So here's something else you also should do. I would have both of you get tested for your antibody levels. And if you can have your doctor cite that your antibody levels are at, you know, XYZ, the number 590, whatever it is, 180, and cite that you have a strong, broad immunity that is equal to or greater than the vaccine, and that you do not need a vaccine, and that he prescribes you not to have the vaccine. If you can get all that, as much as you can get from the doctor, have that in writing with the antibody test. And then send that with a letter requesting a medical health exemption pursuant to the attached doctor's recommendation. Requesting that as well. I would make sure you have that also on file as a medical health exemption so that they have notice. And then say this is in addition to the religious exemption that you've already filed. And you might even want to there put, which you have filed. And it is pursuant to Title VII and Religious Freedom Restoration Act. I mean, that's what that's for. This medical health exemption is pursuant to your rights under the ADA, American Disabilities Act. So, yeah, that's what I would do as well. I'd do that as well. Because there's a growing caseload. There's a growing movement supporting the idea that people who've already had COVID need to get at least the same degree of treatment and protection as people who've had the vaccine. In fact, on our website, we have an index of 91 studies that validate conclusively. Emory University, Cleveland Clinic, just 91 now that validate that people who've had COVID have a stronger and broader immunity than those who've had any of the three COVID vaccines. You want to attach that as well. I encourage you to attach that as well. Okay?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, good. And I wish you all the best. Seek the Lord's direction as you move forward. It's not easy what you're doing. But everyone has to weigh the risks and the benefits of the vaccine and most importantly to seek the Lord's direction as you move forward.
All right, Mike, does that help?
It does. It's a big help, and we'll just continue to kind of listen to everything that's going on and what you're doing. And again, just God bless you, and thank you for the work that you do and for both of you, and I appreciate it.
Oh, and one more thing, too, as we mentioned on our Zoom call, there's some new vaccines coming out that are traditional vaccines, reportedly, like Novavax. I think BreLife is another one. You may be able to work it out with your employer to say, hey, I'm willing to take one, you know, look into it. If you're willing to take one of the other vaccines, say, I'm willing to take, you know, one of these two vaccines. Here's Novavax. Latest report is supposed to be coming out at the end of the year. If not that, maybe the first of next year. You know, I'd really appreciate it if you'd accommodate me. You know, if that's the case, you might want to do some homework on that. If that's the case, You want to let your employer know that as well. Let them know that you're being as reasonable as you can. You're very, and you put that in writing, make sure it's real clear. So it also firms up your case. If you're terminated, like you went out of your way, you were even willing to take a vaccine, but you just wanted to have one that was in accordance with your heart and your convictions. And if you have a piece about that, that the Lord's given you, then you might want to make that argument as well. So.
Good advice. Thank you. Yeah, I didn't realize that. So that's great information.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, Novavax was supposed to come out the end of this year, but the FDA said it needs a higher purity standard, the actual production of the vaccine. So that's kicking it probably the first of next year. We'll see. But that's something we're watching very closely, because that would help a lot of people who don't have problems with traditional vaccines, but do have problems with things that cause blood clots, death, strokes, et cetera. So.
Exactly. Yeah. Mike, thank you so much for your call. And if you would stay on the line, and we've got some gifts for you. We've got some book and some DVDs for you that will be a blessing to you, and things that you can share to share Jesus with. So anyhow, thank you so much, Mike, for being on and for your question. Well, Brad, we're almost coming up on the break here. We've got less than a minute to go. But we've got Gary from Washington who is on the line, and he has a question down the same type of lines here. And so we're going to go ahead and go to Gary. We've only got about 30 seconds for the break, and then we'll come back. But Gary, you're on the line right now. You're on to Every Man an Answer.
Hi. Glad you guys are taking my call today. It couldn't be better timing for me. I've actually got a couple things on my mind. One of them, of course, is the vaccine mandate. I'm not sure if you're familiar, but in Washington State, our governor is talking about rolling that 100 employees back to just 50, which is going to net the company that I work for. And they've made it pretty clear that you will not get unemployment if you get fired over this. So,
well,
I guess
Gary, go ahead and hold your question. Stay with us till after the break. We're coming up on the break, and we'll be back, and we'll let you state your question in full, and we'll let Brad answer it. And if you would stay with us for the second half of Every Man an Answer, coming up right after these words.
Let's see. If something costs less, but people are happier with it, that sounds like something to look into. And that's MediShare. Maybe you've heard switching to MediShare to pay for healthcare can save the typical family $500 a month. And that's huge. But it's also true that people are way more satisfied after making the switch, too. The customer satisfaction rate for MediShare is double that of the typical health insurance plan. Double. MediShare works. It's been around for more than a quarter century, and members have shared more than $3 billion of each other's bills. People love having telehealth and a huge nationwide PPO network. So, yeah, you can save a ton and like it better. Imagine being happy with how you're taking care of your health care. So if you're self-employed or part of the gig economy, or you just want a plan you're happy with, you can call right now and get a price within 2 minutes. A very, very smart use of 2 minutes. Here's the number you need. 855-91-BIBLE. That's 855-91-BIBLE. 855-91-BIBLE.
CSN, the Christian Satellite Network, is broadcast on over 300 stations nationwide, including multiple stations in New York. You can listen in Binghamton. You can listen in Windsor, Oswego, and Seneca Falls. Get a full station list or listen anywhere in the world live at csnradio.com. CSN International, where God's word is heard.
CSN International. Inspired worship from the hearts of believers. This is CSN International.
Welcome back to Friday's edition of To Every Man an Answer here on CSN International. And it's great to have you joining us. And I'm Scott Parker. I'm the pastor of Calvary Chapel in Festus, Missouri. And where is that at? Well, that's just south of St. Louis. And so it's great to be with you. Great to be back here on To Every Man an Answer. And joining me today is the founder of the Pacific Justice Institute, attorney and minister. He has a lot of titles. Mr. Brad Dacus is with us. And you can hear his radio program here on CSN every Saturday, 4 p.m. Mountain Time, and it's called The Dacus Report. And so, Brad, right before we went to the break, we had Gary. Gary's on the line. He's waiting here. He started to give us his question. And so, Gary, are you with us still?
I am still with you.
Okay. Well, you're on with Brad Dacus, so go ahead and state your question in full. We got plenty of time now. And
Brad,
take it. Yes.
Well, I guess I called about the president's mandate, and I'm sitting here in Washington State. We don't get a lot of mention, but this place has gone crazy, and our governor is talking about cutting the president's 100 employees at a business down to just 50, in addition to other things that he wants to do. And I guess I just wanted your thoughts on that. I don't even know what to make of all of that.
Okay. So you're talking about the OSHA requirements for limiting for companies with over 100 employees, is that right?
Yes, although they want to limit it to 50 here.
Oh, in Washington State. So they want even stricter requirements pursuant to the state OSHA that you have. Okay. Yeah, that's problematic to say the least. That said, we've got some good news for employers that don't want to lose their employees. And that is simply this. On our website, they can go to pji.org, and they can click vaccine resources, and on there they can click employer. And what we do is we talk about how an employer, and we also have a 28-page Q&A that they can access as well, dealing with the vaccine mandates. But we talk about how employers have the final real discretion to decide whether or not to accept a religious exemption request or a medical exemption request. That right now the regulations don't have the government coming in and looking over the shoulder of the manager or the owner of the company, saying, oh, you should grant this one, you shouldn't grant that one. It's really up to the manager. So all the manager has to do, the owner of the company, they just have to make sure that employees fit into one or two categories. Either A, they've had the vaccine, an approved vaccine, or B, they have an approved exemption. That's what they have to do. And they could theoretically grant every single religious exemption, every single medical exemption. That's between the employer and the employee. And employers who don't want to lose their employees should make that very clear. They should also let the employees know where they can get information on how to easily prepare a request for religious exemption. And that is at our website, pji.org. It's all free. It's all without charge. A smart employer will do that, and then the employer doesn't want to write it for them. Employee can then do that. And if the employer's already had COVID, they can put that in writing. I submit a medical exemption because I've already had COVID and do not want the ramifications of having it again. I have the antibodies. Employer can say, that's fine with me, and approve it. So that's the big takeaway. Employers, they're still empowered because of the federal Title VII for religious exemptions and the Americans with Disabilities Act, another federal statute that the state of Washington cannot reverse, cannot go against.
You know, here in Washington, they've been sending these exemption requests to L&I first, who then sends them back with an approval or disapproval. And our governor actually was caught sending a memo to L&I saying, try to deny all of these. So it sounds like, and there are people publicly that have been ranting about, L&I is essentially determining the quality of our faith by being the power to rule over our exemption before an employer gets to.
Now, L&I, I'm sorry, what's L&I stand for?
Labor and Industries.
So you're saying in Washington State that individuals submit their religious exemption to a state agency, and then the state agency decides whether or not to accept it or reject it?
Yes.
Okay. All right. In that circumstance, I would contact our local office, our affiliate attorney, Tracy Tribbett. She's an attorney already engaged in litigation for a wrongful denial of religious exemptions. I know in most states, including California, it's not a matter of the state government supervising it, and it's a matter of it being of individual private companies deciding whether to accept or reject exemptions. So if that's what they're doing in Washington State, then I encourage those employees to contact Tracy Tribbett, a very sharp attorney, great litigator, and I know she'll be a definite assistance. The criteria, the standards we put on our website are still the same. And if the state of Washington plays hardball and denies those who should be recognized and should have exemptions granted, they're just asking for another lawsuit from Pacific Justice Institute. We've got an office there, and we're willing to go to bat for people in those circumstances. But they need to go to our website first, follow our instruction, and then if they're denied, feel free to contact our office there in Washington State. And also, we also have on our website what to do if you're denied an exemption. We go through there and talk about what steps, what people need to do to lay claim to their rights in with regards to a denial. And also, some people have hostile work environments that are zealots and have no problem firing people of faith and not accommodating them. That's problematic, but it's even more problematic usually for the government. The government is the most hostile, anti-faith, pro-purging, if you will, of any employer probably in America is the government and government agencies. So that's a great concern what you just reported to me.
Okay. I have another quick question, too. I've been sitting in misdemeanor court now for the last year over a two-year-old incident, and I just got a continuance through into the new year because my lawyer asked for an extension because he said I would not get a fair trial if they put me in front of an all-vaccinated jury. Apparently, only in this court anyway, they're only allowing vaccinated people to serve on juries. Have you heard of this?
No, I haven't. This is new. This is a criminal matter. And are you on trial because you weren't vaccinated?
No, I'm on trial for just a misdemeanor. I'm sitting in a city municipal court over this, and they've been kicking the can down the road for the last year, 12 appearances on this thing. And it finally came after my rejection of their offers to set a trial date, and my lawyer said I wouldn't get a fair trial. They'd be biased because they're only seating vaccinated jurors, and I'm unvaccinated. And he's concerned that I would not get a fair trial, and the judge agreed and continued this thing for 3 months.
So the issue of you being vaccinated or not is going to be raised by the prosecution? Is it a concern that jurors who are vaccinated are more likely to be hostile to people with your worldview, which will somehow come out of the trial?
Well, I spoke to my lawyer after, and he basically said, from the court's perspective, that they're concerned that the distrust of government is a primary reason people won't get vaccinated, and that's on the list. But his thought was that it's the same government, in this case a city municipal government, that's putting me on trial. And the judge agreed to this and said, okay, we'll continue this.
Hmm. Okay. Well, you've got legal counsel, and I still don't understand the connection of how that would impact you. If they don't know that you were vaccinated or unvaccinated, I don't see that as an issue. I mean, and then it shouldn't be an issue if it wasn't involved with your misdemeanor. And with regards to worldview, yeah, people who are vaccinated more likely than the average citizen to be more left-leaning, maybe less tolerant, less likely to be going to church. I mean, there's a lot of Christians who are vaccinated, don't get me wrong, but I do see a more likely to have a bias. So if your worldview or if your Christian worldview is somehow a part of why you're being prosecuted, that could be a problem. Like, for example, about 30% of our cases are actually defending our criminal defense cases, defending pastors and ministers who are being criminally prosecuted for preaching the gospel in public places that are protected by the Constitution. That's 30% of our caseload now, roughly. Maybe it's less percentage-wise because we have all these other new cases coming on, but prior to the pandemic, it was at least 30%. So if your batter is being prosecuted involves you in any way sharing your faith, living your faith, please let us know. Please contact us. We'd be happy to work in a cooperative way with your existing legal counsel to assist any way we can.
I asked him, you know, why he brought that up, and his thought was that it would disqualify potential good jurors because they're not vaccinated, because they won't allow the unvaccinated. And he said then if somebody blurts it out in court, as much hatred as there has been stirred up toward unvaccinated people, that they might just convict me over that alone without ever actually considering the merits of my case.
Yeah, well, someone shouldn't blurt that out. And hopefully the prosecution is not that gnarly and scrupulous that they would and do something like that to endanger a fair trial. But I'm not familiar with the DA's office that you're talking about, and so I can't comment any more probably on that. But my heart goes out to you. I wish you all the best in your situation there.
Yeah, and Gary, we'll be praying too for you that the Lord will give you clear direction on that, and we'll just help you out in that. Thank you so much for your question. And if you would stay on the line, if you'd like to have some resources from CSN, and we'll be glad to get those to you. Let's go ahead and go to another question. Brad, this is going to be for you again. Here we go. We have Mike from Mesa, Arizona. Mike, you're on to Everyman and Answer.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome. How can we help you?
So I've been hearing some chatter that the insurance companies, as far as life insurance, are not going to pay out benefits if someone takes the vaccine and dies from result of it. Can you confirm that?
Wow. I am not aware of that. That's a good question. I would say, there are companies that I'm pretty sure would not do that, but I would just work to check that out. I know a gentleman who is an expert with insurance. His name is Guy Baker, Dr. Guy Baker, with Wealth Teams. If you want information about that, he's located in Southern California, Orange County, California. And if people would like to talk to you, if you want to talk to him about that, let me just give you his information right now. So you can make contact. His phone number is, and you can check with him, and he might have something in the alternative. But Guy Baker, his phone number is 949-900-0099. So 949-900-0099. And he's an expert in insurance, life insurance. He's probably the most qualified that I can think of it. I would probably be best equipped to answer your question, but I'd have to, you have to look at the language in the life insurance agreement, and to see exactly where that's coming from. But that's a definite concern. A lot of people have life insurance. That's a huge concern. So I'd definitely give them a call.
Yeah, and Mike, if you would hold on the line, and if you weren't able to write that number down, I'm sure the call screener can help you with that number to make sure you got it in case you would like to follow up on Brad's advice there. And also, too, we have some things we'd like to give to you, some DVDs and some things that will build you up in your faith and things that you can share with other people to share Jesus with them. And so let's go ahead and go to Shelley now. She's in Wichita, Kansas, so we're coming out the Midwest here, the area. So, Shelley, it's great to have you on to Every Man and Answer today.
Hi, good afternoon. I am a saved Christian, and I have a question.
Okay.
I have been raised on the King James Version. It is the only version that I use, but I do have a question about it.
Okay.
I have been doing a lot of study. I do have a question about the Apocrypha. I know that the Apocrypha was included when King James started translating the Bible in 1609 and first published it in 1611. The Apocrypha was included in the first translation when it was published in 1611.
Correct.
And he even put a proclamation in the front of it threatening anybody that dared to republish it or reprint it, that if it was removed from the Bible, that they could be faced with jail, imprisonment, fines, death, whatsoever. And the Apocrypha was actually kept in the Bible up until about the past 100-120 years, and the translation that King James himself did from the Geneva and the Tyndale and the Wycliffe Bibles, you know, he brought in 46 or 47 scholars himself to translate the King James Version from. So why today in our King James do we not find that relevant to have the Apocrypha books still today in our translation? Why are they not relevant today for, you know, just 120 years when they were in there for so many years, and they were in the Geneva Bible, which was widely used before the King James translation in 1611, that was brought over on the Mayflower with our pilgrims, that was used by our founding fathers of our countries, that was used by, you know, even somebody like William Shakespeare and Paul Bunyan, who wrote Pilgrim's Progress, people like that, that even used the Geneva Bible that had the Apocrypha books in it. Why in just such a short time, 120 years is a long time, but when you're looking at centuries, and why is it not relevant today for us to be looking at those books when we...
Yeah, Shelley, that's a great question. And so we can answer that for you. We'll let you know, right now ahead of time. It was in 1885, actually, when the Apocrypha was no longer included in the print of the English Bibles as they were being printed, leaving only 66 books, in our Bible. But real quick, Brad, do you want to weigh in on this before I share a little more?
No, you go ahead and share on this one.
Okay. Well, what's interesting, Shelley, is what you have is the first person to actually include the Apocrypha in with the Old Testament was actually when the Pope had commissioned Jerome to translate the Bible into Latin, and he translated what was called the Latin Vulgate, and the Latin Vulgate became the official Bible of the Roman Catholic Church, which in time became the only Bible that the church would permit anyone to use. But of course, the problem with that is most people, besides the priests, couldn't read Latin over time, and so they couldn't read their Bible. As you go through Roman Catholic history, you'll find out that the Roman Catholic Church took advantage of the ignorance of the common man because he couldn't read his Bible in his own language, and there were a lot of abuses that came from the Roman Catholic Church upon the common man because of that. Now, what's interesting is it was Jerome who, when he translated the Old Testament, he is the one who went ahead and translated the Apocrypha along with it and included it in there. Now, before that, the Apocrypha books were not included as part of the Old Testament. Again, they were counted as spurious books, as books that were not inspired. The Jewish people themselves did not include the Apocrypha in their canon of Scripture. So at the end of what was about 390, there in the 4th century, whenever Jerome included it in with the Latin Vulgate, which became the Bible of the Roman Catholic Church, what happened was it stayed. Now, it stayed until the time of the Reformation. And here's, it stayed, like we said, up until about 1880s. But what's interesting is during the Reformation, it was the Reformers, it was men like Martin Luther specifically, who pointed out the problems with Roman Catholic doctrine, which some of those doctrines and a lot of those doctrines that were unbiblical and wrong, were such as purgatory, was actually taken from not so much New Testament Scripture, because New Testament Scripture doesn't teach purgatory, but it actually came from the apocryphal books. So this was the problem the Reformers had with the Apocrypha being part of the Bible, is that so many of the wrong teachings of the Roman Catholic Church came from the Apocrypha. So what Martin Luther did when he translated the Bible from its original languages, not from the Latin Vulgate, but by the time we get to the time of the Reformation in the 1500s, the Latin Vulgate had been so corrupt, and it had actually been changed because the church wanted to make sure that it fit their doctrines that they were teaching, such as purgatory and such as the selling of indulgences and things like that. And that's what Martin Luther had a problem with. So what happened was, when he translated the Bible, Old Testament, New Testament, he did so from the original languages, Hebrew and Greek. And what he did is he did include the apocryphal books, but he put them at the end of the Bible. He didn't put them in the middle of the Bible after the Old Testament, making them part of the Old Testament, but he put them at the end to make sure people knew that these books have been here all these years, but they're not part of the canon of Scripture and shouldn't be, and so that's why he put them at the end of his translation. Now, what is interesting is, in response to Martin Luther doing that, and in response to the Reformers, the Roman Catholic Church had a council called the Council of Trent there, you know, in the mid-1500s. And so it was at that time that the Roman Catholic Church proclaimed the apocryphal books as being divinely authoritative for believers, you know, for Roman Catholics or Christians. And so they basically, at that time, in response to the Reformation, what they did is they said these books are on par with Old Testament Scripture. They should be included. And so they were included. And that's why, you know, King James, that's why they were included in the King James Version. And they were included in every version until, now this is what's interesting, they were included in all these versions until 1782. Now, in 1782, what's interesting is Robert Aiken, he is the man who actually printed one of the Bibles for some of our, I don't know what you'd call them, later forefathers. But in 1782, he actually translated the Bible, he printed the Bible in English. This was the first English Bible that was printed on American soil, and it came to be known not only as the Aiken's Bible, but known as the Bible of the Revolution, because this Bible was actually created and made for our revolutionary troops to be able to have a Bible with them, for our soldiers to actually have a Bible, because England was not shipping Bibles. They were not shipping English Bibles to Americans anymore or to America because of the Revolution. So they quit sending us Bibles. So what happened was Robert Aiken then printed the first English Bible, both Old Testament and New Testament, on American soil. And when he did not include. It was a King James Version, but he did not include the Apocrypha, again, for those same reasons that he did not believe those books were inspired. And again, this even goes all the way back to the Jewish people themselves not including the Apocrypha as part of their holy canon. And so then it was in 1885, as I said, where the Apocrypha was kind of officially removed, and that's where we ended up basically with our 66 books. So, Shelley, I hope that helps. That's kind of a short history of it, a long history made short there. But if you would, go ahead and hold on the line. We would love to give you some resources, some videos, and a book by Pastor Mike called It's Time to Grow that you can use for yourself or use in evangelism and giving to other people to lead them to Jesus. And so we've got time probably for about one more call. Let's go ahead and go to Beverly in Arizona. Actually, we got about 1 minute. So, Beverly, if you can ask your question real quick.
Hi, yes. I am gathering my thoughts and doing a religious exemption for my job just in case they ask. And I'm studying. I know about Title VII and the Geneva laws. And
Geneva
I was just
laws?
Wondering, I know Brad. Yes, the Geneva and the Nuremberg. I'm sorry, I'm like nervous.
Yeah, no, I would not include those. I would not include those. Just Title VII, and if you're a federal worker, include also Religious Freedom Restoration Act along with Title VII. That's not going to help you. It's only going to be more of a distraction, I think.
Thanks so much, Brad. Beverly, I'm so sorry we're all out of time, but we hope that quick answer helped you. Thank you so much for tuning in to today's edition of To Every Man an Answer. We'll be back with you on Monday for more, so have a blessed weekend. Go to church, worship the Lord, and tune back in on Monday here on CSN International. God bless you, and have a blessed weekend.
To find out more about this ministry or to receive a copy of today's program, please call 1-800-357-4226 or write us to Every Man an Answer, P.O. Box 391, Twin Falls, Idaho, 83303. That toll-free number is 1-800-357-4226. Subscribe to the free podcast on iTunes by searching for To Every Man an Answer in the iTunes store or visit us online at csnradio.com/TEMA. To Every Man an Answer is a production of CSN International, the Christian Satellite Network. The opinions expressed by our guests may or may not be those of CSN International or of this station.
The preceding program was brought to you by Tower Keepers. Support your local CSN station.